Innovation Rockstars. Innovation Rockstars.
Today with Didier Boulay, founder of the Thales Design Center.
In his role as Thales' first group chief design officer, Didier has been leading the group-wide Thales design transformation since 2013, with the goal of transforming the company into a world-class design organization. In this episode, Didier takes us on Thales' exciting design journey and tells us how a one-year trial run evolved within a few years into a global design center network that now includes 13 design centers worldwide across the Thales Group. If you want to learn more about how famous science fiction author Isaac Asimov and manga comics relate to design thinking, or why it's sometimes important to take a few steps back in time to better understand what the future might look like, don't miss this episode.
Now on Innovation Rockstars.
Hi, and welcome back to the Innovation Rockstar Interviews. My name is Chris Müroth, and I'm pleased to welcome Didier Boulay from Thales today. Didier helps companies innovate and create new ventures. He is a thought leader in developing innovative products, services, and platforms, and he has developed such opportunities for Thales by disseminating design thinking in the organization. He's in charge of the Thales Design Centers, and his role is to actively engage the Thales innovation communities with human-centered design, business model innovation, as well as product, service, and organization design. And more recently, he has been appointed as the leader of the Thales User Experience Design Transformation. Didier, I'm really excited to have you with me today. Thanks for joining.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Okay. So we start with a short 60-second introduction sprint about you, your career, and your role at Thales. The stage is yours for the next 60 seconds. Let's go.
So basically, I've been working in Thales for 20 years. I held multiple positions during this time. I started in the business, then I moved to innovation, research. I've been part of the technical directorate of the company. But of course, the most important part, especially for me, of that journey has been the last 10 years, during which I created the design center we are going to discuss today, which is now a network. It's kind of a design thinking organization in the company. And finally, for 3 years now, I have the pleasure and privilege to lead a more profound design transformation of the company and being appointed for that as the first chief design officer.
Oh, wow. That was in time. Thanks much. Okay, now next, here are three sentence starters for you. And I would like you to complete the sentences. Number one, design thinking is not...
It's not just about creative workshops.
All right. Number two, Thales is best known for...
For its advanced high-tech systems and sensors.
And lastly, number three, one of the most significant technological disruptions in the next few years will be...
Quantum sensing.
Quantum sensing. Wow, great one. Okay, good. Now that we have clarified what design thinking is not, can you please describe what design thinking actually is?
So you can look at design thinking as, first of all, it's an innovation framework. It's an innovation framework that leverages on the creative process that has been perfected over the years by designers or more generally creative professionals. Is biconstructural multidisciplinary, which means that any person can participate. There are a lot of examples of different professions using design thinking, but also that within a project, you're going to tackle all the dimensions of the problem space. And that's the famous Venn diagram, feasibility, viability, and so forth. And last on the process side, I think what characterized, you know, the way you do a design thinking project, it's this rotation of divergent and convergent cycles. You can think problem finding and problem solving, and you move from one mode to another. That would be, I would say, in a nutshell, my kind of definition of design thinking.
That's a great and concise definition. Now, you know, Didier, when people think of large multinational corporations, they often coin terms like processes, compliance, governance, workers' council, reorganization, and so on. And I would imagine that terms like design thinking probably won't generate, you know, too much enthusiasm at first. So why don't you tell us a bit about your journey to implementing design thinking at Thales? And maybe let's start at the very beginning and talk about the why for a moment. So why introducing design thinking for Thales?
The why pushes back more than 10 years ago. Thales organized a learning expedition in the Silicon Valley and visiting Stanford. And at the time, it was all about design thinking in that area of the world. So it was on the program. And out of that, they came back and we signed a collaboration agreement with the D School at Stanford. So that gave us the first experience with design thinking with probably the best you can find. And then to make the design center happen, it was more of a collision. It's company one and a personal one. Company, I think 10 years ago, you could see a lot of signals in the company that we needed to introduce different type of innovation approach. It was all about tech and technology-driven innovation. And you could see business model, you could see user-centered approach coming in a lot of different domains. And so I think the company was ripe to be introduced by a new approach. And a personal one, I was leaving the technical directorate around 2012, and I pitched the HR. They asked me what I wanted to do after that. And I said, my dream job now would be to create design center to take what we learned from Stanford and internalize the concept in the company. And they let me do it, basically. So
they let you do it. So, you know, did they endorse the initiative or did you also have, you know, some, you know, bigger concerns being addressed? And if so, what was the concern about introducing that?
Yes, it was endorsed and by, you know, one person took the risk. It was the general manager of Thales University at the time. His name was Alain, is still Alain Omedour. And he took the risk and he said, okay, we try for 1 year and we show it works. If it works, we continue. If it doesn't work, we've learned. So that's how we did it. And our main concern at the beginning of the adventure was really about proving the value. It's always like that. You need to prove it works and you need to prove it brings value to the business. So that was number one concern, prove it works in the first year. The second one, we decided that we would establish the business model of the design center as an agency, meaning that we would charge for the services we would deliver, innovation services we would deliver to the different entities of the group. And that would also be a very resilient, sustainable business model, because you don't depend on money given to you by the organization you generate. And if it works, you get projects and mandates. It doesn't work, you're out of business and then you do something else. So that was the second concern. And the third one, we had a pretty good idea with the experience of Stanford that we wanted to do, I would say, the real design thinking. So you do it, you do the projects, you do the full-fledged design thinking projects, not, you know, creative workshops. What people confuse for design thinking is creative facilitation and workshops. We didn't want that to be the only thing we would do. But within projects, we do workshops, but design thinking is about the project. So, and to do that, we wanted to remain quite independent. We feared that being acquired, absorbed by other teams would jeopardize, you know, that integrity. So that were the three big concerns we had when we started.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, we have different things and, you know, 1 year is actually not, you know, 1 year is long and also not long at the same time, right? Because, you know, to start this and to, you know, produce first results is actually, I could imagine, quite challenging. So how did that go? You know, after you started, what was kind of the next steps towards proving that this works in a 1 year horizon or 1 year time horizon?
Yes, there is only one good way to show it works is to show projects and outcomes. So the first year was quite intense. We spent the first few months, you know, you work on your content, on your pitch, you go and see a lot of people in a company. Company is big, so you can spend quite some time doing that. I work with a design intern to build up the identity of the design center and some branding and stuff like that. And then for the second part of the year, we started to have our first workshops and then projects and then trainings. And after 1 year, we had already, you know, some good outcomes to show, you know, and confirm that, you know, the approach is working and is bringing value.
Okay, now, you know, let's get real. You know, in that year and also after that 1 year, what was kind of the impact on innovation at Thales in this short time frame?
We basically generated a lot of attention from, especially from the marketing and the service organization. So we receive quite a lot of demand from these guys. And the big impact, I think, is which we didn't anticipate is that it was not just about one design center. We had a lot of innovation teams came to us and asked, can we use the same concept for a team? And do you train us? Can we use the same name, the design center? And so within a year, we had already a number two and number three design centers in discussion. And after 3 years, we had five. And that was very unexpected. We wanted one, and suddenly we built an innovation franchise in the company for all the practitioners of design thinking.
Innovation franchise system is a great term that you just coined. Interesting. Yeah, okay. You know, what happened afterwards? I mean, okay, first you were successful, then you started to build more and more design centers. And what was kind of your role into that? Did you actually go and build, you know, these things? Did you, you know, hand some licenses to other people who were actually in charge of doing that? So how did you expand and scale the concept to possibly, you know, the entire world?
We, at the beginning, the ambition, you know, we were surprised. So we built like really a franchise. We said, okay, this is the package. You have the branding, the methods. This is how to use them. We train you a little bit, and then you're basically on your own. And then we stay somehow connected. The first few years, first 5 years, it was really working like that. Then when we started to hit 7, 8 design centers, and the last few years, we added 5 more. So today there are 13 design centers. You know, this is basically too big not to try to do more with that. For the last 3 years, we really tried to operate as a design center network, sharing resources and really have retools and be connected, delivering projects all together. And this is working great. And so now we speak more about design center network rather than franchise or, you know, one design center in particular.
And how can you, you know, possibly make sure that the different design centers that are operating now, maybe also independently, but obviously also working together, how can you make sure that they don't do the same stuff over and over again? Is there some sort of, you know, high level, I don't know, portfolio management or consolidation of activities that basically prevent you from doing the same in different design centers?
So Thales is very diverse. So the probability we do the same thing is very, 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 very small because we work with different countries, different units. So I think that's not a big risk. If you speak about, you know, creating same material or stuff like that. So everything we do is completely shared in, you know, common repository. We've been the first user of Microsoft Teams in the company. And before that, we use some Shadow IT to make sure that we have access to the same content. 2 years ago, we launched a design system for design centers. So we have one place where you can find the methods, description of how we organize the different spaces, and also describe in more details what we call the value proposition, so the different services and format we support, and we classify them into, there is a primary value proposition, if you want, which is the fundamentals, design thinking, service design. Every design center need to be able to deliver that. And then we have a secondary level, which is specialized because you need special craft and skills. Strategic foresighting would be one of them, design fiction, industrial design. And so that's a specialization of some of them. And then we have an incubation zone where one or two design centers are really venturing, trying something really new. And if it's successful, then we can try then to scale it in a network. So in organizing stuff like that, on one hand, we avoid that, 2DC do, like you say, the same thing without knowing it. So we know what we do and we encourage people to try different things, new things in that sense.
Let's dive deeper just for a moment to the capabilities required you just mentioned. What exactly is design fiction?
Design fiction. So design fiction is, especially if like me during your teenager year, you have read, Asimov and all these great science fiction writer. Design fiction is a way to boost innovation, imagination, and it relies on a theory that says that what people think of science fiction like a few decades ago, it tends to become a reality today or in the near future. And so you go in the past to basically understand what's coming to happen right now. And so you dig into science fiction books, manga, comics, movies, and you try to find a pattern and you try to find inspiration, insights in there. And then you use that as input for your maybe a design thinking projects or, you know, any kind of innovation projects that you have.
How could I possibly imagine such a design fiction process happening? I mean, is there a research phase saying, okay, please now have a look at 5 mangas and 10 different, scientific or sci-fi or futuristic movies and, you know, watch them, come back and then tell me your ideas? Or how could it possibly work?
Yeah, so there is a phase of research where the cool thing, you need to go back in books and movie, but usually in your teams you have people that have already extensive either collection of manga, comics, or are passionate about these things. You need to have an intent. It's like any design thinking project. You don't do for everything. So, for example, one recent project was about how to design for AI and explore the relationship between humans and future AI. And this is a perfect field for design fiction because the relationship between the machine, the intelligent machine, and humans has been explored for decades in movies. So we went in there and tried to find patterns and the different type of relationship between the human and AI and use that as core material in our design for AI methodology of framework. Meaning that when we do a design thinking projects with AI and we want to bring new inspiration or we want to bring, you know, element of language about AI and so forth, we can use this design thinking content that we created through the design fiction content on the table. And usually it really opens the mind and boosts creativity in the process.
Okay, I think I got it. And then now you also said, you know, strategic foresight is or will be added to your toolbox of capabilities. How does, you know, strategic foresight and design fiction now work together?
Today, in our practice, the design fiction or strategic foresight don't work together. There's different ways to basically do the same thing, which is maybe anticipate the future or predict, not predict the future, but predict the futures that are there. Strategic foresight probably appeal to us even more than the design fiction because it brings a very nice extension to our user-centered innovation approach and so forth with something that is very structured to establish, you know, a landscape, signals, trends, and give us not one, but multiple futures, the plausible ones, the probable ones, the desirable ones, and so forth. And the magical trick with strategic foresight for when we engage with our strategic team is that from the start, we establish that there is not only one official future, there are multiple, and we should think differently if we are in this one or this one or this one. And the concept and the variation in the strategy we should have depending on what is the most likely futures to happen and so forth. And you differentiate strongly the concept and the ideation with this framework. So it's really established a very solid framework, landscape, with more data, more probability, and then we can play design thinking in there and go back to, you know, our user-centered approach. So the two are very, very complementary.
Okay, got it. Yeah, makes total sense. So you're basically stacking up tools, you know, in your framework, and by that increasing capabilities, giving more possibilities and capabilities, as mentioned, to the design centers and to the entire network. So makes total sense. Can you share some of the maybe non-confidential projects that design centers have been working on recently? I mean, you just mentioned one, which was, you know, how to work with AI, but is there anything that you can share in addition?
Yes, sure. Just to say, when I say we have an obsession for design thinking projects, today we have completed 80 design thinking projects. So these are usually projects of 3-6 months to up to a year. That's probably the track record we are the most proud of. A lot of them, like you say, are probably more confidential given our line of work. Now, a few of them, just to give a flavor of what we are working on. For example, we work two years ago on with the special forces in France, and we co-design a new type of drone. Like typically, their problem today is when they leave, you know, the headquarters to go to a mission, they need to decide if they take the flying drone, the swimming drone, and each of them is a different equipment, and they cannot carry so much. And so they say it would be great if we had something that would be completely reconfigurable. So you remove the wheel, you put wings, and boom, it's flying. So they design a product like that. The final product is absolutely fantastic. So this is the kind of stuff, but all started with, you know, the field trips, interviews, observation on the field, following them and working with them. So that was very rich. Another type would be, for example, a new luggage scanning system for airports that is poised to reinvent the experience for passengers when you have the security scanning. So that was also blending core technology, but also the passenger journey, the airport ecosystem, which is complex. So we have a lot of projects like this around airport security, passenger journey. And maybe a last one, like we work on digital twin and industry 4.0 problems, opportunities in the space industry, where once the satellite is in space, it's quite difficult to touch it, so or to reconfigure it and so forth. So we develop a lot of technology around that. And again, the relationship between the operator and how to work with these digital twins is a very interesting topic. And we work on these things using the design thinking approach.
So that's really some exciting project examples and also technology examples. Thanks for giving the insight into that. Now let's talk a bit of the future of, you know, design centers and the design center network as a whole. So in your opinion, what's next for the design centers and for the design center networks?
So, like I said, for 3 years now, we are, you know, pushing for a more global design revolution in the company, not only the innovation side of things with design thinking, but more transverse design. And in there, we're looking to establish what we call this design continuum so that we make sure that what is, you know, acquired in terms of insight and design during the innovation phases is not lost when you go to the engineering side of things. And so establishing this continuum, plugging the different design disciplines from design thinking to UX to industrial design to service design. So we are really looking closely to that. And so for design centers, for example, it's about finding their place in that design continuum, which will be easy. It's one design centers is one of the area where we find the most designers today in the company.
So sounds like there is a lot to accomplish in the next few years, right? And let's have one more kind of futuristic question. So not for design centers, but for the discipline of design thinking in general, what are the trends in design thinking and all the methodologies in that context? What's next?
First of all, I you know, one thing that is remarkable with design thinking is that from 2005, when I picked my first book, to today, I mean, all the principles remain actually valid. So it means that it's a very, very solid foundation. Approaching problems with a user-centered mindset, keep proving that it is very, very valid to do it like that. Now, also something we discovered by doing design thinking in a company like us on very large systems, very large problems, is that that is not always enough. So approaching every problem from the eyes of the end users or the human in the loop is a good approach, but probably you need to complement with other approach and with a wider angle. And that's why I think that we'll see more and more extension or complement practices, system thinking, strategic foresighting. We spoke about it, just to have the wider angle and be able to approach more systemic kind of activities in the process.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it would be definitely compelling to see how the entire field is going to advance in the next, you know, decade or so. And that kind of leads us to already the end of this episode. But Didier, before we finish, I'd like to hear your answer to our signature question, which, you know, kind of gives this big context kind of a closing. Now, if you look back on your career at Thales so far, what would you say was your greatest innovation rockstar moment so far?
I had two, actually. So one internal, one external. One internal in 2015, we won a Thales Innovation Awards, recognizing the accomplishment of creating, you know, the first five, I think at the time, design centers. And, you know, we started as a rogue, unofficial organization. So being recognized a few years later, by our peers, in innovation in the company was, like you call it a rock star moment. We were very proud, my team and I. The other externally happened last year. We published an academic paper with two business schools about the introduction of design thinking in such a high-tech company. And we did that with HEC in France and Babson College in the US. And this paper won an international innovation award. And so that was my second, I would say, rockstar moment, more for the external world and the peers outside of Thales.
Beautiful. Congratulations to these innovation rockstar moments. I think they definitely make up for rockstar moments. Now, that's it for this episode. Didier, thank you so much for being my guest in this episode. It was a real pleasure to listen to you and your thought leadership on those topics. Thanks much.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye, Christian.
And to everybody listening or watching, you know, if design thinking is your thing, then leave us a comment on this episode or just drop us an email at info@innovation-rockstars.show. Thanks for listening and take care. Bye-bye.
Innovation Rockstars.
This was Innovation Rockstar Didier Boulay, Thales' first Group Chief Design Officer, on how to successfully embed fresh thinking and creativity into the innovation process of a global corporation. If you want to dive deeper into the topic of design thinking, or if you'd simply like to give us feedback on this episode, just email us at info@innovationrockstars.show. For more exciting contributions from our podcast series, visit our website at www.innovationrockstars.show or browse through our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms.